Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the New Printing Press podcast, where we're talking about all things church innovation, AI, and discipleship, and all of the above. Really, my excuse to talk to some of my favorite people, people who I look up to, people who I think are doing amazing things, and just get to introduce them to the Pulpit AI universe. So today, I've got with me one of my favorite people in the world, the bishop of the mayor of the Inland Empire, man, Pastor Adam Mesa. What's up, man? How are you?
What's going on, man? I'm good. Honored to be on this. Yeah, I'm excited that you're doing it. I'm thankful you're doing it. And I'm excited to be a part of it for this episode.
Oh, man. Appreciate it. I appreciate you taking the time, man, to be on. I wish we could be doing this in person back, just a few months ago. I would have been able to, but you're still in the great yeah. region of Los Angeles, and I'm here.
And you moved to the promised land.
Dude. Bro, okay. There's been three, you'll love this. There's been three times. We still have our California license plates on our car.
Yeah. Because I'm sure half of Tennessee does too.
Dude, yeah. Well, okay. So it's a thing, right? So I pull into the city, and on at least five occasions, I've had someone be like, boy, you better change them license plates. You better get the license plates changed. Like they don't love it. They don't love.
What's funny is they don't even assume that you're just a tourist in town. It's like, they know you have moved. Mm-hmm. It's like, they don't even be like, hey, anywhere else you see someone's other license plate, you're like, oh, you're visiting out of state. You see someone with California plates in Tennessee. It's like, hey man, change these things. So people think that you've lived here for longer than 12 months.
Exactly. Bro, I was sitting in the sauna at Lifetime Fitness and got into conversation with this older guy, and he was like, son, did you come here to bring in your ideas, or are you here ready to embrace ours? And I'm like, man,
what does that mean? I'm just
yeah. So anyways, well, dude, okay. So first of all, I got to say, your incredible church was literally one of the first five churches that ever tested Pulpit AI. Like, I think you guys got access before the thing was even done, and we're playing around on it and giving us some
couldn't even log
feedback.
Into it half the time.
Yeah, literally. Yeah, it was just broken. I remember one time the person from your team was like emailed me, was like, help, we're uploading something and nothing's coming out, and we've got this big event in 6 hours and we need to, man,
can't even log in. It's
exactly. Yeah, yeah. But you're an early believer in what we're doing, an investor in Pulpit AI. And so first of all, thanks for believing in us, man. Thanks for believing in this from the very beginning. But I'm stoked to talk to you because, man, you are amazing. You are an innovator. You're always asking great questions. And I think you guys have done an amazing job of just like this internal discipleship content. I just love everything that you guys are doing. So I want to get to that in a second. But man, let's do the cliche podcast thing. Give us some of your background. Give us your story. Tell us about your church so that we have some context about
I just finished a 7-year transition with my dad, who founded our church in 1994. Since then, it's been 30 years as we record this, and he and I were in a 7-year transition. We just finished as of January 1st of 2024. Great experience. I have a great relationship with my dad. My dad is one of the most humble leaders, you'll ever meet. And he really did this transition great, talking about an older generation to a younger generation. So I'm really thankful for that. And so now I've been lead pastoring our church, Abundant Living Family Church. And well, when does this podcast come out?
I mean, this will come out probably in the next 3 weeks or so. Yeah.
Okay. So is it going to be after April 21st?
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be after April 21st. Yeah.
Okay. So we were Abundant Living, but now we're known as Patria. And so that's our
love
church
it.
Name.
Amazing.
And so as recording this in a few weeks, we will, after 30 years, change our church name. So our church name is Abundant Living Family Church, which half the time, not even my closest friends that I've known for 15 years remember how to say the church's name. And everyone in the city calls it either ALFC or Abundant or, whatever it may be. And so we really felt like at the top of this year, it was time to, because of, the very kind words that you said about us, is we have really been known in the faith-based space as implementing, testing, and adopting the technology that we see being developed today, but also the systems of church to be better disciple makers. And so we really wanted to adopt a name that resembled with more clarity who we are and what we're about. And so according to Ephesians 3, family, patriot basically means family in Greek. And so we dropped off the abundant living part, and we really dropped off the church part, and we just call it Patria now, because we believe just by the way that we be disciples with Jesus, the church part will be apparent to those that know us and those that experience it. And so with now being Patria Church and leaning into this Ephesians 3 model that we are part of the family of God and we get our name from God, that's who we are, family. And so, you know, as we change this name, that's another action of what we're doing and what we're adopting. Our church is a predominantly minority church. So we're about 90% African-American, Hispanic, African, some type of Latino root. So whether it be Mexican, El Salvadorian, Dominican Republic, whatever that may be. And then we have, we're also made up of like Polynesians as well on top of that. And so we, for our history, have been a really minority-based church, a diverse church. We really focused on being the hands and feet of Jesus by helping people with their physical needs as much as they need their spiritual needs met as well. And so, you know, that's how we built our ministry model and how we decide to disciple. And so my desire to implement technology over the years, whether it be as we were the first five to implement Pulpit AI into our ministry, we were the first handful to do Overflow. If anyone knows Overflow,
mm-hmm. We just had Vance on a couple weeks ago. So
we were the first of 10, you know, to really adopt Overflow in the way that Overflow operates. We were the first church in America to adopt pray.com, which is now, you know, millions upon millions of users a month all across America. And so, how that all happened, I think that's just been God and a desire to want to help shepherd people through technology. But through those iterations, it really kind of formulated. I was traditionally educated. So I went to Life Pacific University, which is a four-square university. And then I finished at the Master's University, which is John MacArthur's university. So I got education in the Pentecostal world.
One of our first convos was about just the Life Pacific to that. And we're actually having Dan Fernandez is going to be on the podcast in a few weeks as well. Another fellow Life Pacific guy.
Yeah.
That's sick. Anyways, keep going. I don't want to derail us.
No, yeah. So I studied at Life, which is founded by a woman and Amy Semple McPherson 100 years ago, and then, you know, finished at Master's University, which kind of John MacArthur's polar opposite to that. But I think that's kind of what had made me so hungry to not only unite the worlds that I came from, but also understand my love for theology and my love for embracing what true discipleship looks like, because for so many years I got caught up on the debate of theology rather than the action of theology and how that actually transforms our lives on the day to day. And then really why I paid my way through school was in the early 2010s, I had a marketing company. So I did traditional marketing. So when Google Ads became a thing, when Facebook Ads became a thing, I started doing that stuff in 2009, 2010, 2011. And so I basically did that working with big, big, big companies like insurance companies and real estate companies and running all of their AdWords and running all of their conference back in ticketing systems and, you know, all that stuff like that. I basically did that from 2010 to 2017, 18. So I had a large stint already kind of in, I would say, like e-commerce and digital marketing experience. And so with this new technologies that are, whether it be cryptocurrency or AI, it just really felt like a natural kind of gravitation to where I was at. And I had already started working for pray.com as early as 2017. So I was kind of involved in the tech space fairly early on. Even in 2015, I had the opportunity to pitch to Facebook, a Facebook exec, live streaming video for church services and creating community groups for churches. And the response I got in an email a week later was, "Hey, Facebook's not interested in doing live streaming right now. We're leaving that to Vimeo." you know?
Dang.
So sure enough, during COVID, that's what literally Facebook will say. Yeah. We survived through COVID because of live streaming.
Oh, yeah.
And specifically churches live streaming.
Yeah. I mean,
with
even
the ads that they got to sell, you know?
Dude, that's so true. So many of the, so many of our users for Pulpit AI right now extract the way they get their video is they extract it from download the live stream from live streaming on Facebook.
Yeah.
And then immediately upload that to. So, yeah, man, that's.
And I literally have an email from them saying, hey, we're not interested right now in doing
that's
something
hilarious,
like that.
Hilarious, man.
Whether it was, I met someone one time that was like really high up and they said, I think we were working it already, but they told you that because they didn't want you to get it. Like, they didn't want you to feel like you had any credit towards it. But they were like, it was working potentially behind the scenes. It just. They didn't want to embrace your version of it, of what you were suggesting, you know? And so, you know, that's where pray.com. So that was kind of, that's my story on, I'm a pastor. I love people. I have a history of going to Bible school. And so I love the word of God. And so I'm not one that throws the Bible out in order to reach people. Everything I want to do in my worldview and my approach and my outreach and my evangelism, I want it to be rooted in the word of God as best as I possibly can. And so this love for reaching people has first formulated through the gospel. And then also, you know, I recently had a 17-year-old who's my babysitter and she's in high school. She said, hey, I'm in math class right now and everyone's debating two things. Number one, is Elon Musk the Antichrist? And she said, is God mad at AI? You know, does God not want AI to happen? And so I basically said, you know, here's it in short. Number one, no, Elon's not the Antichrist. It's impossible. I said, number two, there is nothing that shocks God. And so we will see in the years to come whether AI will give God glory or give us, you know, something to pause and reflect and say, hey, is this something that is ultimately going to use to separate us from God? I said, I don't think that's the case. I think it's like anything else. I think that anything else you could use to grow closer to God and give God glory, and you could also use it to separate further from God. And so I told her, but no way is God in heaven right now going, if I could just get AI to not be a thing anymore, then I could continue to have my church here on earth, you know? Mm-hmm. So I told her, it's like, so I said, so as far as I'm concerned, I will be embracing it to the point that it can give God glory and use it to reach people just like her, to give God glory. And so that's kind of the recent, that's how our love for reaching people and using technology has developed over the past, I would say 10 years.
No, I love that. I want to get, in a second, I want to get to kind of how you've been able to like foster that kind of culture of innovation within your church. But since you brought it up in terms of kind of some theological, philosophical frameworks about AI, where are you landing on that? Like as a pastor, as someone who teaches the word of God, as someone who has a very large staff that probably is using and or will use various AI tools to make their job more efficient or easier or whatever. How are you guys thinking about that? How is there a line? Hey, I'll use AI for X, Y, and Z. Have you guys told your staff, hey, use it for this, but don't use it for this? Like what's that look like for you guys?
Yeah. You know, we haven't had like a full staff meeting about the approach of it, but I have met with our creative team and our content team and we do have conversations around it. Basically the theory that, or the approach rather that I take it when it comes to, the development of current technology and AI is the way that I try to formulate with our team is saying, we're going to use these technologies and we're going to use AIs the way we would take our vitamins. And that's how we're going to view it. And so you cannot survive off of a diet of vitamin C and vitamin D. Even if I gave you a multivitamin and I just said, hey, pop these every time you're hungry. To a certain degree, that is not nutritional. It's a supplement, which is supposed to build you stronger from what you're already doing. And so hopefully you're still being fit. Hopefully you're still eating right. And so a multivitamin or any other type of supplement you can think of, whether you make a green juice every day, that is going to make it all the better. but it cannot be your full diet. And so, like we told our team, is these things cannot stay. This cannot be your full diet. You cannot pop into it and say to our youth pastors, like, give me a 3-part sermon on Noah. And then you just like walk away. Like, that is a full diet. You need to study yourself approved. That scripture in 1 Timothy will never change. You need to do your due diligence. You need to be a disciple of Christ. You need to have your time with God. You need to be applying the word of God in your life. And so with those elements, it's like, do your normal. If I was talking to like a Bible student, do your normal oika, observe, interpret, correlate, apply, do those things. And then after you begin to formulate a context, begin to formulate a message, now either take that message, put it into AI and say, hey, here's my audience. I'm speaking to teenagers. Is this coming off clear enough for teenagers? And what speak to, you know, help me get this in a way and speak this in a way that teenagers may understand in this age. And then AI is going to really begin to make some suggestions that you go like, and that's the kind of stuff I'll do. If I'm doing a content and then I go, hey, I'm speaking this to married couples that are struggling with X, Y, and Z. Is there anything within this message that would be unclear, that I would have to explain more? What would be your suggestions? And then AI will pump out suggestions. And some of those I'll be like, oh, that's really good. Others I'll be like, and it's not good at all. And so we're really using it as a supplemental resource. I mean, for us, what Pulpit AI does to me is the perfect supplement, because all of the content has been preached, all of it has been taught. And then now it's giving us the vitamin C and the vitamin D, which is, hey, here's a summary of what's going on. Here's hashtags you can use here. Like to me, there's no inauthenticity in being told what a hashtag you could use or what summary. Inauthenticity would be like, hey, Adam, when you go up there, here's the 3 points you're going to share. Here's the, you know, and like, okay, now I'm not being fully authentic to it. I think there's a balance, because I know there are other churches where they do live preaching and they have 10 campuses, and there one guy from, you know, the main campus sends his sermon notes and guys are supposed to preach it. So the argument could go further and say, well, what's the difference between 10 campus pastors preaching the same points and the same message, and they just got to tweak the stories, to asking AI? And the short answer I would say is, I don't fully know what the difference is, right? But that's not something we would ever do. And we would ever be okay with. So that's the difference, at least for us. So, you know, that's kind of how we're processing that.
No, that's actually a really great comparison, because I do think you're right. Right. So much of it is the personality of the pastor, the kind of culture they have, the staff they have, what they really value. Right. So you, I guess to dive like a bit further into that, you spend a lot of time around a lot of pastors, right? Like you have, I'm sure, a lot of pastor friends. There's a lot of stats that have been coming out recently. And, you know, as a bit of a contrarian and recovering, always repenting cynic, I tend to, you know, the stats always lie in my mind, right? Like, just, I live by that. Like if there's a stat, that stat is manipulated for some kind of either product that's being sold or message that's being propagated, right? So there's a lot of stats out there right now about like, oh, only X amount of the church is open to using AI within the church, right? And that number's pretty low. I think the number's like 30-40%, maybe even less than that. With you and your like friends, and I'm not like holding you to any kind of like definitive, this is how the church is thinking about AI, but like just sentiment. What are you finding that your friends, that people that you like, colleagues in ministry, have the same kind of sentiment that you have? Do you think there's like a pushback against it? Do you have any thoughts or ideas around that as a whole?
You know, overall, what I'm seeing, and like you said, I do get the opportunity. I get to go to a lot of gatherings that have pastors at them. It seems like, at least in my area of function, and again, I am in one kind of circle of type of church, which tends to kind of be the non-denominational kind of mainline church. But as far as it seems, anyone that is a millennial pastor and younger is wanting to embrace AI with also a cautiousness of abuse. But I also see them doing that with alcohol and cigars and everything else, right? Yeah, a previous generation was very, you know, lack of a better term, religious when it came to certain approaches, right? Where like you saw millennial pastors come in and go like, well, you know, you can have you can have some alcohol or you can have a cigar. And then we see some of the pastors go on the news for alcohol abuse or whatever. And then we go, well, maybe we should be really cautious about this. So what it seems like is there's this like, oh, I'm for AI. I'm for the technology advancement. I'm for even like we're very transparent. We recently held a discipleship sprint. It's 5 weeks where we took men through 5 weeks of what biblical manhood looks like. And I told them very early on, hey, when each message is done, we will be putting this in an AI system called Pulpit AI, and it will be giving us your homework questions. Where our last sprint we did, I had the questions done ahead of time because we did it by hand. But we feel that the AI is asking more sincere questions than even we were coming up with on our own. So therefore, you guys will be getting your questions emailed 24 hours after each session. Just being very transparent of like, hey, this is what we're doing and this is how we're doing it. And so what I see a lot of pastors is just really offering honest anecdotes of, hey, here's where you should be cautious. But I don't know too many pastors that are millennial that are just like, absolutely not. This is of Satan. This is going to ruin the world. This is going to corrupt us. I don't know many people in my church who actually care, to be honest. And that could just because I'm in the minority church. I don't know. But like the people in my church overall don't really care whether we are or aren't using AI. They'd probably care if I was using AI to make my sermons. Mm-hmm. But like even us saying like we're supplementing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Having you talk to a robot to get counseling, you know, like mm-hmm. if we were doing that, maybe, you know, if we had counsel AI and, you know, and that could be a thing that's going to come out. But as far as it didn't seem like my people would be too comfortable. But other than that, they're not like, we rarely get questions about it. We rarely, you know, so it's more so for us on an internal feature. We're kind of having to safeguard ourselves. And with other pastors, what's great is pastors are talking about it. So thankfully, AI hasn't become this like naughty little tool that everybody's using behind closed doors and doesn't want anyone to know that they're using it. Guys are pretty transparent to be like, oh, yeah, I use it. Or no, I don't. Man, tell me how I could even use it. You know, and I had a thing with pastors that had, you know, massive, massive churches. And this was about a year ago. Half knew about AI and half didn't. And they were all in their 30s and 40s. And half were like, I can use that in ministry. How? And then guys were like, well, you could put your sermon notes in it and ask it to give you small group questions. You could do this, you could do that. And they were just like, oh man, that seems cool. I'll see how it goes, you know? And so there are some people who just aren't early adopters, and AI is still an early adoption, and it's not going to come out. It's not going to be a thing until, you know, they buy a car using AI, or they, you know, or their kids have to start using it in class in a intuitive way. Then they'll start saying, how's the church using it? And it's going to be like, yeah, well, I mean, we've been using it for about 2 or 3 years. And all those, even the company you work for has been using it for 2 or 3 years. You just didn't know, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I'm pretty sure everybody is already kind of, even though someone may say, I'm not for it, to me, it depends on how you word the question. So if someone said, what do you think if your church started using AI? And the person goes, and like, if you ask my mom right now, hey, what about the church using AI? She'd say, what is that? Oh, well, it's this self-thinking computer that is smarter than you, can phrase things better than you, and can do things better than you. And churches are going to start using it to reach people. And they're going to go, that doesn't seem very authentic. I don't like it. So so to me, it really is coming down to like, what is the phrase and what's the knowledge? Like, what does the person know it actually does? That's what now they can answer the question, honestly. And I think the polls you're referring to potentially have a lead in of naivety of who it's asking, or they're going and asking people who fully know what it is. Right. And so there really is phrasing that has to be understood around it to really get a pulse of where people are at.
Yeah, no, that's great, man. I love that. And so true. I'm trying to decide which way to go next, because I have two questions, like two kind of places, but I want to start here. So, you know, one thing you talked about is, so you took over this church over a long transition period, church that's been around. It's a legacy church. And I mean this in the best way. I've been there. When you walk onto the property, you feel the history, like in the best kind of way. Like, you know, I'm a dude that's been like a church planter for 10 years in LA, bro. We're setting up and tearing down, and we just meet, like, so to walk onto a church campus and go, man, you can feel the heritage and the history, and you know, it's like a generation of building, right? Which is like such an incredible thing to see. Oftentimes I think people see that and think about that and think not innovation. They think like big, massive church. It's this big, it takes a long time to steer ship, you know, slow moving. You guys aren't necessarily like, how have you been able to cultivate innovation in something that is, you know, multi-generational, multi-ethnic, like, you know, you're not like a necessarily like a young little nimble church plant still trying to figure itself out. How have you guys been able to foster that? Like, maybe it's on your staff team, maybe it's just in your congregation as a whole. How do you keep this idea of innovation in front of your people at all time? And like, why is that important?
You know, I think, so for me, the most massive important driver that drives me with innovation, and I would say had driven my dad, my predecessor, is he is absolutely passionate about the next generation. So when I was in my 20s, he was nonstop passionate to understand my age, to understand my like millennials for him is something he talked about every day, that he wanted to understand. How can we reach them? What do they need? What are they looking for? You know, and some of those early conversations, which have become, you know, basically normal nowadays, but it was like, millennials need conversation. They need community. They need, you know, like all these things that we would just, we actually think again is very synonymous with church again, but 12 years ago, 14 years ago, that wasn't. Church had become kind of an American capitalistic structure, a Burger King, you can have it your own way. Every church is going to have like 70 ministries that reach every individual nook and cranny of your life, and you can build your faith however you want. And that's kind of like, that has died so fast and not become a thing. And so my dad was really early onset, like, we're going to change. We're going to change. If it's not reaching the next generation, then we need to change. I remember specifically one time when Caitlyn Jenner came out with her name and being trans, you know, my dad went in the pulpit and was just like, you know, he'll always be Bruce Jenner to me and bop, bop, bop. And I had this young adult Bible study back then, and a bunch of young adult came in and they were just like, we don't get why Pastor Diego had to go so hard. I have friends like X, Y, and Z. And it's not that he wasn't saying something that to us, our conviction wouldn't be true. It was like his approach and his language, because you started to see millennials lead more with empathy and cause and care, which Gen Z now is like taking it so much further in a very beautiful way, you know? And so I went to talk to my dad. I was like, hey, here's some feedback I'm getting. He said, okay, hey, here's this. The next time I talk about anything that's cultural, I'm going to ask 5 millennials before I go on the pulpit and ever share my thought on like what I think that implication is to the Christian life, because I want to honor all generations in my approach. Because he had baby boomers standing up, cheering, shouting, and he had all these millennials that were just like,
come on, pastor. Yeah.
And millennials were just like, oh my gosh, you know. So like, he really set that standard initially, and then he really gave keys to the next generation, being me. So to me, I'm just trying to regurgitate to say, okay, well, we aren't the star of the show anymore. Now Gen Z and Alpha are the conversation, and Gen Z and Alpha are the first techno babies truly in the world. Me and you, we had half our life not with technology and half our life with technology. Well, Gen Z and Alpha whole life is technology based. And so our approach on guiding our ship with our church is, we make it clear to our church that we will never put the gospel aside. We will never put the word of God aside. It formulates every one of our convictions, but we will utilize every technological advancement to reach the next generation. And whether you like it or not, if you're going to join this church, you're going to know that we are going to try to do everything we can to captivate the next generation, help them understand their God-given purpose, and also help them understand the gospel in the way the Bible is telling us today, and has always told us. And so that has really been, and so for us, that's launched our emphasis on, you know, social media, our long form podcast that we do, all of the sprints that we now do that are only in 5 week increments. So it's what I think you and I talked about at one time. We went from like a 12 month discipleship, because most churches kind of create their discipleship process within a one calendar year. And we said, no, we're going to make it a 5 year journey. And so we're going to tell you, you need to commit to this longer. We're not going to fix all your problems in 12 months. We're not going to fix them in 5 years, but we can do a better job at understanding the Christian walk in 5 years than we can in 12 months. So why don't you come along this journey with us, and and that'll be understanding what a biblical man and woman looks like, understanding gifts of the Spirit, understanding purpose, calling, even understanding how to read your Bible. Our next discipleship sprint is going to be 5 weeks on how to just read your Bible by yourself. And so it's just kind of taking, and then we use technology to double down and supplement all of that stuff and help land the plane as much as we can, while also making sure technology isn't the star of the show for us. Mm-hmm.
I love that. Making sure technology is not the star of the show. That makes so much sense. That's such even just a cool like question I think churches could ask themselves when using any kind of technology, right? Is like, is this the star of the show? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, is this what this is about? Yeah, I love that. Okay. So lastly, and I love the sprint that, and I remember you telling me about making that big shift. And I love that too, because it's very much like, hey, we're like, this journey of following Jesus is not 1 year. This is a long time. And it takes a long time to be formed and to be discipled and all that. And that's such a cool perspective. Lastly, before we close, talk to me about Beyond the Letter and I forget the other podcast that you guys have. Beyond I Do. So yeah. I remember like first talking to you about that, and you're like, man, we're about to launch this thing. I think it was just like weeks before you were about to launch.
Yeah.
And I think it's been wildly evangelistic for your church, right? Like I know that people, that was a huge purpose of it, but... And that's amazing. I think that's a gift you guys have. I think your team, the clips and all of that stuff that you guys do, it's blown up because you're doing the stuff that and you're talking about the stuff that people really want to talk about. How has that podcast affected or helped you disciple your congregation? Like a lot of the churches we talk to that use our app is like, man, we want to do like a podcast. And maybe that's like the pastor just talking in more depth about the sermon or answering questions throughout the week. And they're kind of going like, man, but I'm not going to get 20,000 people to listen to it or whatever. And what we keep trying to help them understand is, man, even if 100 people in your church listen to your pastor unpack deeper ideas or interact with their spouse or other pastors on the team, like it may not feel like it, but you're discipling them just by them listening to that. Like what fruit have you seen? I know you guys do like live recordings for the church and like all that stuff, man.
Yeah.
Like
talk
about what that's ignited in your church, just in terms of you as the lead pastor now having like an additional signal to your congregation throughout the week that they can, that they can listen to. Has that been impactful?
Yeah. I mean, it's been the absolute game changer for us. And just like you said, you've talked to people, like I can't encourage pastors enough to start, at least reflecting and thinking about how long form podcasting or more content that focuses on the Christian life, how beneficial that would be. And for us, we had no plans of reaching the amount of people that we have reached. We had no plans. You know, right now we have 3 to 5 videos that go viral, over 2 million views a month. You know, whether it be TikTok or Instagram, like we had no plans of that. We were just like, hey, we're going to go in. If we win some people to Jesus and if we can help disciple people in our church, like I'll be so happy. So originally right off the bat, I was like, man, I would love to have a few hundred downloads a month. Like that would be so amazing. And like, if we could just have, you know, a couple posts, you know, every couple months get 10K views, like that'd be so great. You know, I had no idea that it was going to get to 50,000 downloads a month. I never thought Kyrie Irving would share us. Terran Tactical, the guy who supplies all the guns for all the John Wick movies, has shared us a couple times. Steve Urkel has shared us. Like, I mean, it's just, it's insane. Kyrie Irving, his wife came to our church as a result, came to one of our women's night as a result of seeing our podcast and seeing a clip. And so, like, that stuff, though that may on the outside be impressive, I'm not saying it to be say it sound impressive. I'm saying it to say, we never thought that. We were just like, hey, we're going to build a little studio. We're going to invest $30,000 to build like a really nice proper studio so that we can get proper clips for social media. We want to help a person, want to peel back the curtain on what the Christian life looks like. So for those that aren't familiar with our podcast, as of right now, my goal is to do 5 podcasts a week, but right now we're doing 2. We do Beyond the Letter, which is like a Christian lifestyle podcast. So you think the Christian Joe Rogan experience, you know, and then, so we just bring people on conversation, based about anything in the world. And then we have, and that goes on for 1.5 to 2 hours. And that's long form. And then we do another long form that's shorter for us, though, is we do about a 45 minute to an hour episode a week on just relationships and marriage with me and my wife. And we take questions, we watch video clips, we talk about, I mean, our latest episode was about women after pregnancy, how they don't want the lights on during intimacy. And so how can a woman embrace her beauty after children, right? So we talked about that for 1 hour. And so we touch secular concepts in relationship, Christian concepts. And what we're trying to show people is, hey, this faith thing is not far off from where you currently are at. And this idea of Romans chapter 2, that the law has been written on our heart. And so if I could just show a person that a relationship with Christ is not as far as you think it is, and those Christians are not as different than you are. And just like Paul did in the book of Acts, and he said, hey, you know that statue of the unknown God that you guys been praying to? Like, I know that God. And so our podcast is kind of, and every pastor should do their own different version. They shouldn't hear mine and go, oh, that's dope. That's what I want to do. You know, you should do that if that's who you are. If it's not, and you like the piano, I mean, talk about famous pianists over the years who were Christians and what songs they wrote, you know, and do long form every week about that. Doesn't matter. Your church will listen to it. You know, they'll lean into it because you're passionate about it and you're willing to share about it. And so to me, that's how we've leaned into that. And so for us, 1 out of every 3 first time visitor has had some sort of contact with our podcast. And so, you know, we'll get close to 2,000 to 3,000 visitors a year, and 1/3 of them say, I heard about this church from someone sharing a podcast, someone showing me the podcast. We not too long ago had a woman who was going through a divorce. Her and her husband separated and they couldn't get along. And she found a relationship with Christ, started coming to our church. And he sent one of our marriage clips to her on Instagram one day. And it was me basically talking about, you know, how a wife ought to be and blah, 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 blah. And he said, if you were more like a woman, like this guy's talking about, we wouldn't be getting a divorce. And then she just like, that's crazy. That's my pastor. He has no idea. And then a couple of days later, he sends another one. A couple of days later, he sends now my wife. And he's like, yeah, I really, she's like, do you like this podcast? He goes, well, I just came across it on my Instagram and they're sharing some good stuff. And she goes, well, you know, they're my pastors. This church is 10 minutes away from where we live. And he was like, no way, we got to go. They went and now they decided to call off the divorce. They're trying to work on their marriage. And so to me, like, you know, Kyrie or whatever other cool thing, like, does it don't beat that story. That's not the only story that we've had like that, that where a viral social media clip came across someone's door. You know, I have friends who have told me someone has joined my church because they first saw your clips and it started them get them thinking about needing to go to church. And then they came to my church and said, I came because I saw a podcast clip and I started looking to faith and you were the nearest church. And he'll say, what clip was it? And they'll show and he'll be like, oh, that's my friend. He does a podcast, you know? And so it's just stories like that, that have encouraged me that we feel for us, our call is to be a front door to faith for people. So we have Muslims who watch us, atheists that watch us. Cause we tackle everything. And then what we want to do is as we take you through the process of the front door of faith, we now want to help you understand the discipleship process as it relates to walking with Christ. So me and my wife will talk about seasons where me and her haven't been intimate. We've had to wrestle through that. I'll talk about on Beyond the Letter times that I've been insecure or doubted my faith, or have people on talking about it. And people will go, man, I didn't know people with such developed faith struggle with this stuff. And, you know, cause you're preaching a great sermon that's crafted perfectly, that, you know, has 30 hours, you know, behind it of study and preparation, as opposed to zero prep time in front of a camera. And that's the way I recommend it to most pastors, is like, don't sit down unless you're a genius in the leadership space or something like that. Like, don't create a role sheet and this and that. Like, you sit just down, show who you are. It's like, we're doing like this right now, and see how many people will be impacted by that journey. And then for us, then we take AI and technology on the back end, and we tell it to tell us this video, what should it be titled to reach the most people? What hashtags should be used for this video? And so part of the, like you said, the reach has also been AI telling us, like, don't call it that, call it this. I'm like, okay, that's what we're going to do. And we do it. And sure enough, it gets better traction. So
dude, that's amazing.
AI understands tech more than we understand tech. So it's, might as well use it wild. For that stuff.
That's right, dude. Yeah. Oh man, that's so good. Well, Pastor Adam Mesa, man, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me this afternoon. And I miss you, man. I hope to see you live and in the flesh someday soon. We'll make that happen. But man, I love you. Yeah. Thank you for just supporting us.
Bro.
And it's been good to have you. We'll link to your podcast, your church. We'll link to all that stuff in the show notes and all of that. And man, I really appreciate it. And
absolutely,
man, we'll talk to you soon.